on the record.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Why don't we start with roll call.
Mr. Allen.
Here.
Mr. Noddy.
Here.
Mr. Bosch.
Here.
John Winther.
Here.
John Kelsey.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. And could you confirm that public notice was provided according to our requirements?
Yes, it has been.
Thank you. First off would be approval of the agenda. In the packet, we've been provided with an agenda. Are there any amendments or changes to it, Ted?
Not from the staff side.
Okay. Any of the board members see anything needs to be? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I move, Mr. Chairman, approve the agenda as read.
Is there a second?
I second.
Any opposition to approval of the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. So why don't we move to public roll call? If we can start, why don't we start over here with Chris?
Chris Brutz with ADA and AEA.
Bruce Churko, ADA, AEA.
Carl Reisha, ADA.
Steve Agginson, AEA.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Jan Severs, Washington Capital Management.
Mark Schimmschimer, ADA.
Tim Leach, MEA Repairs Alliance.
Sally Harvey, Alaska Center Environment.
Chris Hall, Sierra Club, Alaska.
Carsten Rodvik, ADA and AEA.
Mike.
Mike Harper, AEA.
Mark Simons, Alaska Pacific Leasing.
Hit a band, Wells Fargo Bank.
Chris Tite, Nana Development Corporation.
Nikki Black, Trustees for Alaska. Chris Anderson, ADA, AEA.
Jim Hensap, ADA, AEA.
Brian Bjorkquist, Department of Law.
Ted Leonard, ADA.
Valerie Walker, ADA.
French people, Scott, ADA and AEA. Sherry Peterson, ADA and AEA.
Thank you. Next on our agenda is public comments. Are there any members of the public who wish to comment? We have one. Can you just raise your hand so we can get a sense of how many? Okay, just the three of you? Okay. Why don't we start with you, sir, in the middle? And generally what we do is come on up to the seat there.
That's
it. I guess just leave it for now. It's a workstation in case you need to check on anything on the web or anything. And usually we ask folks to keep it to around 3 minutes, just we have a full agenda. And if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, and then we're happy to hear your comments.
Thank you. My name is Tim Leach, and again, I'm with MEA Ratepayers Alliance, based out of the Valley area. I can say I've risked life and limb, just as we all have, coming to the meeting this morning. Probably the most treacherous part was the winds on the highway for all of your information. And I'm here this morning to just speak briefly about some concerns that have been raised, especially as of yesterday in the press conference around the Healy Coal Plant number 2. Certainly, as I'm sure most of you are all aware, there was a proposal for a coal plant up in the valley, and we had a fair amount of discussion around that coal plant as well as analysis done. Some of the same concerns would be applied from our perspective to the Healy Coal Plant number 2 that has been proposed for a restart. The two broad areas of concern that we have are compliance issues, specifically around permits and potentially looking towards the near future, what may happen with carbon cap and trade at the federal level and how that would impact this plant, as well as mercury regulation. And that seems like it may be an imminently regulated emission as well from the EPA. Since that's still in regulatory uncertainty, as is CO2 to some extent, there are a number of uncertain costs around that. And that's the second broad category, which is financial liability. For those compliance issues, it seems like there are uncertain costs attached to emissions of mercury and CO2 at this time. And when asked yesterday at the press conference, it sounded like the chairman of GBA was unable to actually attach a figure to that and how that would impact the operations of the Healy Coal Plant number 2 there. Another financial liability concern would be around the volatility of pricing of fossil fuels in general, and specifically, of course, the coal for this, for the feedstock. We've seen the coal prices for plants such as this fluctuate quite widely in the last several months, especially, as you're all aware of. One of the main issues as a ratepayer and as a taxpayer really comes around the impact that this plant may have on potential bullet line for natural gas. And this is something that Mark Foster did some analysis of when it came to the proposed MEA coal plant. It looked like, in his analysis at least, that if we had the 100-megawatt plant that MEA was proposing, that would decrease demand for natural gas and negatively impact the economics of the bullet line. And I think that's a major concern for all of us taxpayers in South Central, or that would be accessing that gas through the natural gas bullet line. And I would really ask if there is any analysis that has been done for Healy Coal Plant Number 2 in regards to its impact on the bullet line, to have that information be public so that we can see that that's not jeopardizing a chance to have natural gas come down from the North Slope. And I know that's a slightly different time frame, but I do think it's a very important concern to raise. Those are our main issues. There are certainly a number of others, but those are the big topics, and I very much appreciate your time to hear my comments.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions from board members for Mr. Leach? Thank you very much for your comments. And why don't we go over here?
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Chris Paul with the Sierra Club Alaska, and I would like to echo Tim's statements. I think he made a lot of good statements. What I would add to it briefly is that Healy Coal Plant Number 2 has been a black hole for public money. There's $300 million already invested in it, and now it's looking like it's going to take at least another $80 million to get the plant even remotely functional. And I would just ask that you take that into consideration as you move forward, that it's probably time to call this plant a failed plant and keep it mothballed. Thank you.
Vicky.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for your time. My name is Vicki Clark. I'm the legal director at Trustees for Alaska. You all received a letter from us beginning of this month on behalf of the HEA Members Forum, Sierra Club, and the Northern Alaska Environmental Center, who all have significant issues with the restart of the Healy coal plant. And I guess we'll call it Healy 2 to make it easy to speak about. And as Tim said, there are a lot of new issues and a lot of financial issues that folks are very concerned about. I mean, this is a project where we're basically throwing good money after bad. And now the supposed clean coal technology will be retained in the facility, and we already know that that's a failure. So, and not only that, but as Tim notes, we now have the issues of carbon dioxide emissions and mercury emissions, which weren't even in the mix the last time around. So the permitting for this plant is going to be significant. I think the EIS is going to be outdated, and there's going to be a lot more analysis that needs to be done, not only from the environmental standpoint, but from the public health standpoint. Alaska is not only the place where we're going to be putting more carbon emissions in the air, but we're also the place that is experiencing the impacts of global warming most heavily. And all of that has not been considered in this kind of a project or any other kind of project moving forward. So this is a very expensive project financially, environmentally, and from a public health standpoint, and there are huge concerns. So I just hope that you all continue to consider the ramifications to the taxpayers of Alaska and moving forward with the project. That's it. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. And just, I don't know if there's any questions for Vicki. We did, as you mentioned earlier, we received your letter, and we are working on a response to that as far as providing the requested documents.
Okay, so, great.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that wish to address the board at this time? Do we have anybody online that you know?
Nobody.
Who's that? Okay. Okay, well, then we'll close that portion of the agenda. And the next item is the prior minutes. We have minutes from the December 11 meeting. And is there a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Kelsey. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Winther. Are there any changes or corrections that need to be made that anybody has identified? Hearing none. We don't need a roll call vote for these, no? Is there any opposition to approval to the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes for December 11th are approved. So, the next item, we have old business, but apparently we don't have any old business to cover.
No old business.
Okay. Then we move into new business. First off is loan resolution 0901. And turn it over to Ted. You want to kick us off?
Chairman Galvin. This is a resolution for a loan participation on a new hotel, the Spring Hill Suites. We have Chris Anderson here and Bruce is also here that could discuss the loan. It is a loan for a new hotel for, I believe our participation is $12,600,000. And again, as I'm sure the questions will come up, is that we do have a significant portion of our investments in tourism, and that was taken into consideration as the staff went through the loan. And due to the strength of the corporation and also job creation, we are bringing it forward to the board. And Chris could go through it, Chairman Galvin.
Okay. Why don't you give us just an overview, and then maybe we'll see if there's any questions rather than going through great detail from the start.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, board members. Ted has already indicated the borrower, UMED LLC. Guarantors on this credit would be Nana Development Corporation, Inc. and Nana Regional Corporation, Inc. It is for long-term financing for 159 guest room Spring Hill Suite in the University Lake area. The target clientele for this hotel are persons and firms utilizing the facilities in the vicinity, which include the Alaska Native Hospital, Providence University of Alaska, and Alaska Pacific University. The gross loan amount is $14 million. This request is coming to us from Wells Fargo Bank. They are asking that we participate in the amount of $12,600,000 for a 25-year term based on a 3-year variable rate. Management will be by NANA Management Services, LLC. They are an experienced hotel management entity, and we have listed some of the properties that they currently manage. This property, the hotel actually is going to be on leasehold property, 4.02 acres, leased from Alaska Pacific University. It is a 50-year ground lease with 3 consecutive options to extend the lease for 10 years each. And the term of the Spring Hill franchise will be 20 years. Howard and Wing appraised the property. They appraised it at $21.9 million. Which gives us a 64% loan to value. There also was an environmental study done by Dowell, and the conclusion of that report, there's no significant potential environmental impairment to the property. There would be an estimated 50 to 100 short-term construction jobs associated with this project, as well as 100 permanent employment positions that would be created as a result of the project completion. I'll skip back to diversification in a minute, but I'll mention that staff is recommending this loan. There are some conditions, and they are outlined here. I'm not going to read through them, but essentially a payment reserve account would be established, replacement reserves would be established, and they would also have to be in compliance with all the terms and conditions of the franchise agreement with Marriott International Incorporated. In regards to diversification and hotels, as your memorandum says, these ratios that are incorporated here are tourism dollars. That is a segment that we do track. But there are other loans involved in tourism besides hotels. And so those ratios that you see are straightforward. But when we extract out hotels only, without the UMED request,
as a function of our portfolio, we have 17.75% in hotels. When you do add in UMed, we're at 20.87. We have 29 hotels, five of which are in Anchorage. The balance are throughout the state. Juneau, Fairbanks, Ketchikan, Homer, Sitka, Glen Allen, Hatcher Pass, their various locations. I know that that is, you know, probably getting up there in a ratio of segmentation. We've had some internal discussions on this, and I think are continuing to discuss whether we do want to, you know, put ratio limitations on our segmentation within the market. I am, however, comfortable with this particular request, and it is strong financially.
Okay. Well, thank you. Are there any questions from board members? Chris, yes, starting with Leo.
Hi, Matt. You're talking loan to value, mm-hmm. 64. Is this 12.6 divided by 21.9? Did I get 58?
Oh.
So I'm not getting the number you're getting, so maybe you can correct me.
Pardon me?
Are you including the 1.4?
14 million is the gross amount.
Oh.
Yeah. And then we're being asked to participate 90%.
Oh, okay. I was just using the
data loan. Hers is the entire loan, including the bank loan.
Okay.
The bank loan and the ADA loan.
Yeah. The loan to value includes the gross loan amount. Okay. And we're being asked to participate 90% of that.
The other one I have is on the resolution. It's 12.65. It's 12.6 we're doing, right?
Oh, no, you're right.
Good eye.
That is a good eye. Thank you very much.
Plus. One for two.
The first one was a good question. This is a very good catch.
Yep, it is 12.
So the resolution needs to be amended when we get to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It should be 12.6.
Okay. John.
Chris, the loan is a total of $14 million. The completion value is $21.9 million. What is the cost of it? You know, the total cost of it? I would imagine someplace between those two numbers, or is it the 21.9?
$24,951 is total cost.
Okay.
Yeah. And of that, the borrowers are putting in $10,951,423. So they are putting in almost 44% of the total cost.
That answers my question.
Yeah.
Any other questions from board members?
One more. Are you comfortable with this hotel numbers as to what's out there? And, because it seems to me there's a lot of hotels out there now, and a lot of I drive around town and they're all over the place, and there used to be 5 years ago, I'm seeing there's one there that I hadn't seen before. Where'd that come from? And I'm just wondering, are we getting out there where we're getting,
you know, these are things that we think through too when we underwrite these. And we had benefit of a personal tour on Tuesday. You should have come with us. But they did take us through the facility. It is under construction right now. The thing that is a little bit different about this particular hotel is it's almost going to be, you know, site-specific. Because, yes, it is a hotel, and yes, you know, we do put it into a tourism category, but their targeted clientele is a little bit different.
Hmm.
And they are going, you know, they are targeting people who, you know, either have friends or relatives in the hospital who have, and they come into Anchorage and they want to stay. Same with universities, you know, students who are there and their parents or their relatives or their friends want to come in, you know. They're going to have shuttle service from the airport to the hotel, which most hotels do. But they are also going to have shuttle service from the hotel to universities, to the hotel, to the hospitals. And for someone coming in from the bush or from other areas, really they're not going to have to rent a car. You know, they're going to be shuttled around if they're coming to this specific site. The location itself is very nice. I mean, it's right on the lake. I mean, it's not going to have the kind of traffic volume, you know, that you get on international. But these are these people know how to manage hotels too, and they are managing more than this property, so they're going to get a certain amount of overflow, you know, tourism wise. In other words, they can move around the people that are coming to their facility.
So this, we have a secure situation on this too. I mean, if it goes
well, secured by the hotel facility,
by the property itself,
by the property,
right? By the improvements, yes, it is on leased land.
And
yes,
guarantees.
We have improvements. We have the guarantees of Nana Development Corporation, and they're very strong financially. I would have to tell you, my personal opinion is, first of all, you know, if it weren't a flagged hotel, or you know, if it weren't in a good location, or if you didn't have the financial strength behind it that you do here, it would be a little more questionable. Mm-hmm. But what makes it strong is the fact that they can pay you regardless.
Okay.
Did you want to come on that? Chairman, I was just trying to say the same thing, is that as we did the portfolio analysis and analyzing this loan compared to our portfolio, those other factors weighed in more, like Chris just said, than it would have if it was just a regular hotel that was going to be funded down here for tourism.
And I'll also note that at it was either our last meeting or the meeting before that, we had a report that we had commissioned with regard to the hotel industry and the strength of it within the area, and the recommendation from that was that it was still strong, it was still a growing segment that was not oversaturated yet, and that the vacancy rates indicated that it could handle more facilities. And then my question, or maybe more of a comment just to get confirmation, I assume that part of our when we talk about the ratio of our loans being in certain segments, part of that is somewhat not within our control. It's
That's
what
correct.
Is presented to us and what comes to us for approval. We can't necessarily, we're not driving it completely
right.
ourselves in terms of targeting certain segments for this type of program.
I agree with that, and that's why I kind of wrestle with it. You don't want to, so to speak, shoot yourself in the foot for putting an arbitrary percentage out there and then turn away good business.
Right. It would seem to me that in sort of the evolution of these things, it's just a product of what's expanding, what's hot at that particular time. They come to us, and 2 or 3 years from now, it's going to be maybe another sector that starts to expand because that's a growing sector within. I mean, we had health for a while, now we've got hotels, we'll be in something else soon enough.
Yeah, you can't make up the difference by switching to a segment that isn't there.
Or we can't just, if we put a cap on it, it's not suddenly going to create other applications for other sectors.
Exactly.
So.
Chair, I would say that what we're looking at in that, is just like what you said, is more in the risk analysis of the loan is where the segments are.
Right. Overexposing ourselves to one particular segment. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, I do. I
want
to be sure that what bank is involved, because I sit on the First National Bank, and I'd have to recuse myself.
I believe this is only Wells Fargo.
It is only Wells Fargo.
Okay.
Thank you for pointing that out. Okay. I guess if there aren't any other questions, I'd be open to a motion on the resolution. Oh, you have another question. Sorry.
Well, say, I'm on the Wells Fargo Advisory Board. So
okay.
I wonder if I have to excuse myself. So
okay, Wells, is this the, this is their statewide advisory committee, and you have no fiduciary responsibilities for the entity? Okay. I guess I would consider that not to be a conflict, just because you have no fiduciary responsibilities to them, but you do have fiduciary responsibilities to us.
Sure.
And is there any, I think there's an opportunity for anybody to object if anybody sees an objection to my ruling on it not being a conflict? Okay. So with that, is there a motion on the resolution?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Kelsey. And
as amended.
Okay. Well, let's actually, why don't we take the second, and then maybe we'll move the one that's in the packet, but with it already moved, we'll amend it now. Just the amendment to change the 12.65 that's mentioned in the packet to 12.6 million. And I assume you'll accept that as an amendment. Okay. So is there any objection to the resolution 0901 as amended? Hearing none. Oh, do we have to roll call on this one? Okay, let's do a roll call on this one.
Commissioner Bonte?
Yes.
Commissioner Naughty?
Yes.
John Winther?
Yes.
John Kelsey?
Yes.
Commissioner Galvin?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to, I guess it's item 8B in our packet. Ted, do you want to walk us through this one?
Yeah, sure. This, again, is another loan participation revenue, and it's based on a project for an office warehouse, and Wells Fargo Bank is requesting ADA's participation at 90% of a $6 million loan for a principal amount of $5,400,000. And we have Chris here to go through the loan and answer any questions.
Okay. Once again, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. Yes, this request does also come to us from Wells Fargo. Borrower would be David G. Falk, DBA Pacific Alaska Leasing Company, and the guarantor would be Bonnie Falk. This is for term financing for a built-to-suit office warehouse that will be tenanted by Baker Hughes Oilfield Operations, Inc., a very quality tenant. They will be leasing for 5 years with 2 5-year options to renew. It's a 47,750 square foot office warehouse located at 795 East 94th, which is just south of Diamond off of King Street. We are being asked to participate 90% of a $6 million gross loan amount in the amount of $5,400,000. Wells Fargo would, on their participating interest, would have a term of 10 years, and ADA would be at 20 years. This borrowing entity has multiple loans participated with us. I have listed those. All of these loans are current, have been current, and have paid as agreed. If you do add in this request to the existing outstanding loans, the overall exposure to Mr. Falk and his company would be $9,016,453. Pacific Alaska Leasing Company is a real estate leasing and holding company. It was formed by Mr. Falk in 1991. The entity holds the majority of the properties owned by the Falks. Mr. Falk does act as his own general contractor on the projects. He's been in business in Anchorage for many years, since 1972. This was appraised, again, by Mr. Wing, self-contained appraisal of $8.9 million. Estimated on completion of February 1st of this year. Loan to value would be 67%. Again, an environmental study was done by Hart Krauser. It did indicate detectable levels of hydrocarbons, but they were below the ADEC cleanup levels. And the site has since been fully developed, and there have been no environmental problems that have been discovered. With this project, there would be 2 jobs that would be created. In regards to diversification within the portfolio, for warehouse office industry, we would go from 14.28% to 15.48%. And for loans participated within the Anchorage region, we would go from 22.48% to 24.49%. Staff is recommending this loan. We do have conditions that are listed here, fairly standard conditions, certification by the appraiser on completion that the value would be at least $8.9 million. The bank is to enter into subordination, non-disturbance, and adjournment agreement acceptable to the authority and assign third amendment to the lease acceptable to the authority. And with that, I would open it up for any comments or questions.
Are there any questions for Chris on this one? I guess just one question. You mentioned in the related loans that this particular borrower has a number of loans with us with all excellent payment history, but this loan will more than double the amount of exposure we have to this borrower.
Yes.
Do we have a if you look back in the history, is this sort of the peak of this particular borrower, or has borrower paid off others that have brought the amount down? Where are we sort of?
I didn't go through all of the payoff loans, but if the question is, you know, do we anticipate any future borrowings?
No, no. Oh. It's more looking back. I mean, you increase your exposure to a particular borrower, you ratchet your way up, and this is sort of a big jump. And
right.
I think we obviously have an excellent history with this borrower, so there's nothing to really cause any concern about. I'm just curious if...
I'm sure that we have paid off loans. I think that all of the loans that are here are on a long-term basis, so
they're
going to be with us for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because most of these are, you know, have only originated within the last 5 years or so.
Right. Are there any questions from board members?
One, Mr. Chairman, and again, I go back to the like with the hotels. Do we have a percentage of the market we want to be in, and warehouse type leasing and property investments and stuff? And how does this match up? It looks to me like it goes up to from 14 to 15 with this,
mm-hmm.
right? And mm-hmm. is there a goal for us or a target that we want to stay in, or?
Well, personally, you know, whenever I get to, you know, like a 25% level or up, you know, I start to think about it.
Okay.
You know?
But so we're well under that limit.
I think so. And just referencing, you know, that general segment, that's probably, from a commercial real estate standpoint, that's probably one of the healthiest segments in the market right now so far as vacancies are concerned. I think right now they're like under 2%. It hasn't given enough upward pressure in the rents to really justify a lot of new construction yet, but very, very low vacancies.
Yes.
Chairman, Chris, was there any discussion with Mr. Falk if after the first 5 years the lease wasn't renewed, how he would cover the payments on this loan?
Well, we don't usually talk directly to the folks, but to the bank.
I mean, so what assurance, just let me phrase another way, what assurance do we have of his ability to pay if the lease isn't renewed after the first 5 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, to an extent, you know, Mr. Falk, out of his own, you know, financial resources could pay, you know, some of that. Certainly, if Oilfield Services was not the tenant, he would be looking for another tenant to supplement that, and I can only say that because the market is so tight now, and I think will be in the foreseeable future, I think he would have some alternatives in obtaining a tenant.
And also, the payments are not tied to this tenant.
They're not tied to this tenant. We're just a very strong tenant.
Yes,
yeah.
But we have a number of other commercial properties that hopefully will remain occupied and that can be used to pay this as well, just less profit.
I just see he's done a lot of borrowing, I think, since 2004 with us.
Yeah.
So as long as you're comfortable with it, I'm comfortable with it.
We do have both Wells Fargo here today and Bart Simmons from Alaska Pacific Leasing, if you would like further comments from them.
Yeah. I'd just like to hear from what the future looks like and everything. It looks real rosy. It's real good.
Oh, yeah. We've been there.
We learned the last 6 months it can go south pretty fast.
Yeah, you bet. Bart, would you like to come up and join us for a minute and maybe talk about the company for just a minute? This is Bart Simmons, Vice President of Administration with Alaska Pacific Leasing.
Thank you for having me here. Basically, Baker Hughes is trying to consolidate their operations. They have several subsidiaries and operating in different locations around Anchorage. So this facility, they're consolidating the different operations into one location and operating unit for efficiencies. And one of their subsidiaries, Centralift, is already one of our tenants and has been one of our tenants for about 15 years now. And normally, Baker Hughes won't commit for longer than a five-year lease, and that's their standard operating procedures to to go for a five-year lease and do five-year extensions after that. So Central has started out as a five-year lease, and they've been with us for 15 years now.
They're an excellent tenant. That's what the industry is all about, or the economy is all about here right now. So
right, right.
Appreciate that.
They're here for the long term. Long term, yeah.
But now that you explain how they lease their buildings,
okay.
5 years at a time, I appreciate that.
Any other questions?
Any other questions from board members? Thank you, Mr. Senate.
Thank you.
Any other questions from board members for Chris? Amen. Is there a motion on the resolution?
I'll move, Mr. Chairman, to approve Resolution L09-03.
Okay. There's a motion on Resolution 0902. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Commissioner Bunchhaven. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, can we have a roll call vote?
John Lampert.
Yes.
John Kelsey.
Yes.
Mr. Galvin?
Yes.
Mr.
Von Schaden? Yes. Mr. Nod?
Yes.
Motion
passed. Okay, now we get to item 8C, but I notice on the cover memo it talks about Resolution 0901, but we've already passed 0901. This is G. Oh, wow, now that's confusing. So L's are loans, G's are general obligation. Okay, well, I learned something new. Interesting numbering system. Okay, we'll pay particular attention to this now. Okay, so Ted, you want to walk us through this one?
Yes, Chairman Galvin. This one is requesting from the board the ability to set up a capital budget for $500,000 to spend funds on this building for renovation, major repairs, and maintenance. And the building originally, as you will see in the resolution, was capitalized at a cost of $3.3 million. We believe that we do need these improvements to for safety, for efficiency, and so also to protect the investment in the building. And the categories that we're requesting the budget to be used for is $200,000 for energy efficiency, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, control systems, etc. $100,000 for safety and code compliance, and $200,000 for building renovations and efficiency. The reason that this isn't part of the operating budget is that rule of thumb for the capital budget, if it's over $25,000 for any one project, and also if the life of doing these changes are going to be over a year. So we're requesting this as a capital budget item from the board, and we do have Chris Rutz here that could speak to the different categories and what we need.
Thanks, Chris. Yes, John.
Clarification. You mentioned this building. Are we talking about this building this building we're talking about?
No, this is our building.
We're working
and all the way out to the second parking lot.
I thought clarification was indicated.
Yeah. Up to the chain link fence over there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you want to just give us a little bit more detail, perhaps?
Sure, I can give you a little bit. So I don't get too bogged down in details. Having been the facilities manager here for about 4 years since I got here at ADA, there have been a number of projects that have come up from time to time. There were some small projects we were able to take care of in the operating budget. However, there's been a number of the estimates that I used to come up with this were for a number of projects that said, hey, we need to take care of this. And the numbers came back and they exceeded what we had available in the operating budget. And we did have an operating budget increase 2 years ago, I believe, to cover a particular fan. We put a fan in and we put a cooling tower in. Considering the additional costs that we've had this year as it relates to the increases in energy costs, both electricity and gas, as well as some other impacts that we've had in our operating budget, as well as some building things that have just happened. We had a lift station go out. We had flooding in the basement. Had to deal with that. We've got a sinkhole developing in our back parking lot where we had a an employee parked, and all of a sudden his car went right through the asphalt. So we've got some exploring we need to do in the back
Jerry,
parking lot.
What was that?
that red blazer or whatever it was right back there. I don't know who parked there, but
Brian.
Yeah, Brian see
the tail end up. The one I'm just seeing the tail lights.
Yeah. So those are some of the things we're looking into. As far as the energy efficiency, we're looking at doing some lighting things possibly on the second and first floors. Ways to control power going on and off, also along with DVC controls on the HVAC. I've had the maintenance guys tell me it's going to be costly if you have to repair those things, and you may be able to get some energy savings if you go to better control building control systems. On the security side, we had the issue with respect to the code issues on the stairway. You've noticed the stairway, we had to fix that. That there was clearly a code issue that we weren't aware of coming into the building. There's an interesting story behind that, and I'll share that some other day. And then we also have some issues with respect to security in the back parking lots, and we're looking at the security cameras or some things to try to deal with some of those issues, considering the neighborhood we're in. So adding all together, there are a number of things that we see a need to attend to improve both the working space for the employees, safety for the employees, and hopefully reduce some of our energy costs in the long run. So if you have any questions, just let me know.
Just one thing quickly is that, and we stressed with Chris as we're going through this, we said these aren't operating in nature.
Right.
They shouldn't go through our $237,000 facility, so they're not going to be replacing light bulbs or doorknobs.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ensure the board we're just not increasing our operating budget.
And I assume that you have worked with the folks at AEA on efficiencies and conservation and look at all those opportunities. And just a personal observation, coming in this morning, noticing that coming through the front door, there's a sign saying, please close the door behind you as you come in. I don't know if that's something that mechanically can
that's the controls. That's the DVC controls. That's what we're dealing with on the DVC controls. Hopefully that'll provide better controls over the air pressure within the building. Okay. Right now it's a manual adjustment that happens in the spring and in the fall.
I get it.
And it's just what happens in the building. And when it gets warmed up, when it warms up. So.
And knowing that HFC has its own weatherization program with sort of their own group of experts, are we taking advantage of the same sort of brain trust that is available to make sure that we can maximize our potential for energy efficiency within our operations? Or can I request that we do that?
We do that, yes.
The reaction?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. As well as general services and some of the other folks that are currently managing state buildings and looking at ways.
I mean, if we're going to authorize $500,000 to do things such as energy efficiency, I'd like to ask staff to take advantage of whatever expertise may be out there to use that to the best that you can. Any other board questions? Yes, John.
So, other than this, do you see anything in the near-term future that we may be looking at for repairs and renovations that we maybe should be looking at now at the same time?
Well, there may be. I mean, the issue is if we start poking around in the parking lot and we find we've got some serious issues underground, you know, that we might need to do something with, there may be some additional costs related to if you've got it, depending on how much you have to rip up the parking lot or whether I can just fill the potholes. You know, if we're looking at modifications to spaces, the agencies go through their strategic plans and needing to move people around or shuffle people around, there may be costs relating to that. Some of what I've proposed in here is to cover some of the improvements that we've made already. For instance, if you look at the second floor where we put some offices in at the same time we did the stairs, that alone was a $50,000 cost. So there's a possibility there could be some other things. The hope here is what I'm going to be doing is working with the deputy directors and prioritizing, coming up with the list, prioritizing which ones to go through first and to make sure that we maximize the use of these dollars.
Yes. My question was aimed at the building.
Yeah.
So that we don't all of a sudden do this and then find out we should have done something else that would lengthen the life of the building or make it better for the working environment.
Yeah. Right now, the what we've got on this list are the ones that we're aware of. But buildings get old and things fall apart, and that's every once in a while something else might come to our attention. So,
Chris, I think Board Member Winter's saying, are we looking at the building as a whole?
Oh, correct.
Piecemealing these.
Right. So this is This is looking at the building as a whole in terms of both the exterior, interior, and the parking lots.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Okay. Is there a motion on the resolution?
I shall move.
Second.
Okay. So there's a motion and a second on resolution G09-01. And is there any other questions or comments on it before we take a vote? Seeing none, we have a roll call vote.
Mr. Galvin.
Yes.
Mr. Nani.
Yes.
Mr. Bolchevich.
Yes.
John Winter.
Yes.
John Kelsey.
Yes.
Okay, next item on the agenda is the director's comments. You going to take them in this order? Or
I could jump ahead a little, Chairman Galvin, and say that we have our regular reports for the loan activity, the loan delinquencies, and the ADA project updates and discussions. We weren't going to really have a discussion on those items. They were there for the review of the board, and if we could go through those quickly if the board has any questions.
Does any board member wish to go through any of those in detail? Okay, hearing none, I think that's fine.
Excuse me, Ted, I might just mention something just real quickly.
Okay.
Newsflash here.
Yes.
In regards to delinquencies, our delinquency ratio, as you know, is quite good, but a large percentage of that delinquency percentage is one credit that has is a bankruptcy situation that we've talked about before, Factory 12 out in Dutch Harbor, and they have been under the process of refinancing that credit. They do have a buyer. We have not asked ADA to participate because we chose not to. And they have been financing this particular individual for years, and so they are going to go ahead and book this credit. We have stayed in touch with attorneys and title companies and kind of been babysitting this thing for 3 months. And just to let you know that right now it's slated to close on the 20th of this month. So that will take $1.9 million plus off of our delinquencies and bring that ratio down to a very, very small number.
Very good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yes.
Could I have two project updates? I just wanted to highlight if I could.
Oh, sure.
First one, I'll ask Brenda Sherry Hanemaus that Ketchikan Shipyard, we just completed an economic impact analysis from some folks from Commerce on that. And I wanted to share the report with the board just to have that for the record, just demonstrating some of the impact that this project has on the Ketchikan area, positive impact. Much of this report was used as part of the annual report this year on information related to Ketchikan. This is the report that came from Ketchikan. And the second item I wanted to do was a brief update on Snetisham. As you are sure all aware that one of the new towers was down again.
So it was one of the new ones?
It was.
Okay. That wasn't clear.
What I have here are some...
Not Snetisham.
Yes, Snetisham.
One of the ones we put
Snetisham
in.
Funeral. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. they're not Bradley Lake. There's two more.
Oh, I think... No, we need one more over here.
The first picture on there, well, first of all, there was an event on Monday. Avalanche let loose top slab, took out tower 3.5 and grounded the system and separated Snetisham from Juneau. They went on emergency diesel backup power. So that is tower 3.5, which is the red box, second from the right on that picture. We had already begun avalanche evaluation and, if you will, mitigation results. The helicopter were snow-packed, would appear to be avalanche-prone. They were bombing the areas to release snow and have generally been successful. In fact, today's report, they had another avalanche or another zone that they were able to get released from in different areas and can mitigate that. In this particular instance, in the weather pattern that occurred, snow occurred quickly. Snow and rain prevented the helicopter from getting to the higher elevation that could have released that particular slab beforehand, or could have released a bigger slab and taken the tower out. We don't know for sure. So today we're going with natural cause versus their own cause. Estimation is 4 to 6 weeks for repair. The anticipated repair right now that they're continuing the evaluation analysis on is actually to not replace tower 3-5, but to reinforce towers 3-4 and 4-1, which are on either side of 3-5, to allow that conduit, or excuse me, the conductor, the cable, to be stretched up without the support. And they believe that is a reasonable repair that will not, still not a long-term repair, but get the system back up as operating as quickly as possible. Today, they anticipate putting a crew on the ground, weather permitting, to cut the cable at the point, because the cable right now is intact, but just to assure that in between now and when they get this off the ground, another avalanche doesn't come down, sweep the cable and the towers, and pull down additional towers. So that should happen today. The anticipation is, and the weather report is such, they should be able to get on the ground. But again, safety is first priority.
And Jim, that's what happened last year, was it not? The project manager was saying that one brought the cable down and then the slide.
I guess that's the question. When you look at the photo, it would look like 3-5 is in an extremely exposed location.
That's correct.
3-4, not so much. Did 3-5 go down and pull 3-4 down?
No, it did not. In this particular picture, which is last year, you'll actually see, if you look at the total screen, three of the towers, including 4-6 in the far left, were destroyed. Part of this was the cable being pulled. Part of it was a significantly much greater slide that took out a number of towers in two different locations. Actually, 3-4 and 3-5 were hit by the slide itself.
Okay.
As opposed to being pulled down.
This
is the picture from last year that still identified the towers. Additionally, with the amount of debris that came down last year, there was a lot more momentum from fairly old growth trees that also tangled up in this. But it is first slide knocked the tower down, damaged where the second slide last year came down, cleared 3-5 from the premises entirely, and then continued the damage of the towers with some of the cable. So, yes, difference is that there was a lot of debris that was included with it, so it was a little bit different.
Okay.
Said that today they hope to get the cable cut so that they minimize that risk. Again, they're still monitoring avalanches every day, flying as appropriate, mitigating as appropriate up and down the 45 miles of line. The analysis that we had requested last year for further hardening of the towers is ongoing. Part of the problem has been, while they just had, it was weather, the Del LaRue is looking for very close 2-foot contours on the area to do their analysis in terms of slides. They have flown that, I don't have the contractor's name, doing kind of a laser evaluation to put together the model of what the terrain actually looks like. Weather has prohibited that in the last 4 weeks, so they anticipated having analysis done in January. It would appear that that analysis and recommendations would be closer to March now. We knew it was going to be a long-term event. We knew that any hardening of this replacement cable would be anywhere from 18 months to 2 years from the time of starting, including last year. So that's why the replacement in kind is in place.
So the long-term solution is 18 months to 2 years out.
Yes.
Our temporary solution for this particular event is 4 to 6 weeks?
4 to 6 weeks, depending on weather.
4 to 6 weeks from now?
From now.
That's better than what we heard originally.
They have all the spare parts on hand. They have already moved barge to the site to start clearing snow up and energizing the camp for a crew to come in, getting the camp up prepared, waiting for the weather. Of course, the problem with this is it's an extremely exposed location. They finished the analysis. They have to get on either side of a tower to see what reinforcement guys have to be done. But again, 4 to 6 weeks. Diesel price today was 2.25. So that's at least that impact is significantly less than last year. And then one last thing is that the Lake Dorothy plant is estimated to start producing power late spring, fall of this year. What that will do is in the winter seasons when the tourist loads and things aren't as high, the Lake Dorothy will accommodate about 40% of the power that's currently being used. That is in a, it comes in a totally different spot. So down the road, a year from now, the evaluation of winter avalanches, the impacts and the amount of power loss will be mitigated by the Lake Dorothy plant itself.
Okay. Okay. Are there any questions on that report? Hearing none. Is there any expectation that, I mean, what's our participation in costs or anything associated with this activity?
Unknown at this time. They're currently preparing an estimate for the cost of the repair and would not like necessarily to share that at this time until a little bit more accurate on it. But there is an anticipation that they may come back for a loan similar to last year's to cover this capital cost.
Okay. So there's no liability of the cost for us?
No, there's not. That's correct. Yes, no liability.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks, Jim. Next up.
Next up would be that we would like to give you a update on our strategic plan. And this is where our presentation starts. We have Mark Gardner here from Western Financial Group, and he is one of the consultants helping us with this plan.
And is this going to go right here behind me?
Right behind you.
Okay.
And do we have some handouts?
We do. We have, as an example, we have a State of Oregon's most recent economic development plan there in that group, as well as a copy of the slides. And thank you, Chris. Before Mark was started, I'd just like to bring the board up to date that Ada, we began a project to develop a strategic plan last fall, of which we contracted with Russian Financial Group to assist us. The scope of work was specifically to look at reviewing with input from agency stakeholders, review the status of the economy, find out where Ada's role fits in that economy, what other economic development agencies are doing as benchmarks, and help us develop a strategic plan to guide Ada's activities for the foreseeable future in terms of where we might want to be pursuing projects and addressing our portfolio. All the board members have participated in that through the survey process. Northern Economics, I believe, has contacted you all and interviewed with. We had a public workshop in November with approximately 40 stakeholders from around the state in various different industries, also participating in that. We have gone and contacted our key lenders for the loan participation program as part of that survey process. And yesterday morning, we had an Ada group meeting with the consultants to go over what they've done. And Mark would like to give a kind of summary of where we are today.
I'd like to quickly say, Jim, on that Ada group, it was all employees directly related to it. So it was the input from the employees on this plan, too. So.
Okay.
Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Just briefly, a description of the team. I'm Mark Gardner. I'm with Western Financial Group out of Portland. My partner, Pat Clancy, is involved in the project as well and was here yesterday for our meetings, as is Gordon Davis, who's a subcontractor of ours. And then, as Jim had mentioned, Pat Burton and Cal Kerr from Northern Economics have been much involved in the process to this point and will stay involved. And of course, the board, we want to thank you all for your participation and input to this point. We've, as Ted said, now reached out and gotten feedback from all the Ada employees, and we'll continue to do that, as well as the relevant outside stakeholders. The planning process is relatively straightforward, and this is a good diagram of it. We start from an understanding of the mission and the vision, on to the environmental scan, strategy formulation, implementation, and evaluation and control. But it really should be not an arrow, but more a circle, because the fact is that coming out of the environmental scan, we go back and look at the vision and mission, and as we work with your management team and come back to you for the board's workshop on this, obviously we will be talking about the vision and the mission as well. The core questions are, you know, what is promote economic growth and diversification in Alaska? And that seems straightforward, but given the unique nature of the Alaskan economy, it's not. And so part of our task is to make sure we translate what's going on in the world to the Alaskan situation. And then from that, how can ADA most effectively do that? And what strategies should ADA pursue to achieve the objectives? So the strategy elements build from, first, the effect of global trends on the Alaskan economy, and again, the key and unique features of the Alaskan economy, how the best practices to do economic development and economic development of finance apply to Alaska, and what that means for opportunities for the Alaskan economy and for ADA. And then coming out of that, alternative ADA roles and strategies, and potentially new and revised ADA programs, and then implementation plans for those programs. So some themes, and this is a first overview of the process, and you know, it isn't our intention to take a lot of your time today going into details, but just give you an idea of what we've been doing and what we're finding. So themes from the environmental scan, talking to the stakeholders and input from the people that are involved in ADA. You know, we have some good news for the most part, that the perceptions of ADA are positive. The authority is viewed as being competent, respected. It is viewed as being reactive, which wasn't in all cases, or maybe not even in most cases, wasn't a criticism. It was a statement of fact. In a couple of cases, it was a criticism, or at least a suggestion for change that ADA could be more proactive. There is a perception that ADA's activities and role are not sufficiently coordinated with state agencies, and I will tell you from working with other similar entities, that's very common. And there is a perception that there's the potential for political interference, and again, that's also common for state development agencies. And the roles that are envisioned by the stakeholders for ADA, good news again, comport pretty much to what ADA's mission is now, although there's a sense that there could be more leadership from ADA, which again goes back up to the reactive instead of proactive. But the emphasis on projects and finance, you know, the current key roles of ADA are, you know, consistent with what the scan has found so far. So then moving on to the projects and programs, and reflecting those general themes, more active project development, continuing to engage in infrastructure, supporting the core industries in the Alaskan economy, continuing expanding financing alongside commercial lenders. This was highlighted particularly given the uncertainty in the commercial lending markets coming out of the global financial issues. And then some interest in new programs related to early stage companies and for rural economic development financing. Turning to looking outside, we've been engaged in a national and international search for best practices in economic development, looking at what works and what doesn't to do economic development, which relates to strategies, tools, and organizational structures for that purpose. And, of course, then looking at trends. And you'll see in the Oregon book that you've got one of the big trends nationally in economic development right now is clusters, which is, you know, working in industry groups to find what are the clusters that are most likely to be your growth areas and putting your resources to work to meet the needs of those specific clusters. With all of that information, then we applied filters to translate what best works in economic development to the Alaskan economy and to ADA. Another part of our looking at the environment is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. I'm sure most of you have been through these kind of things before. We start from global and work down to ADA, and it is definitely an interesting time to be doing this because we have, as you all know, a global recession in all sectors, and what's different about this time is both the rapidity of the economic change and the amplitude. So we've, in a year, maybe you can go back partway into 2007, we've had meaningful reductions in wealth, trade, industrial production globally, and at the same time, huge volatility in commodities prices. So part of our job is to figure out, how much of that is secular or long-term and represents, lasting changes in the global economy, how much of it is just cyclical or short-term, and then applying the filters again to figure out what matters out of that for Alaska and what the pluses and minuses are. So going from global to the U.S., then there are some specific things that relate to our analysis as well. We've had the housing bubble burst. We've got locked up credit markets. We have historic deficit and debt growth, and maybe subsequent to, but not necessarily caused by, the housing bubble, we've had manufacturing, retail, finance, insurance, real estate, and construction, major reductions in activity in those sectors. Not surprisingly, then, we have nationwide state and local governments' fiscal stress. So all of that for the last two slides here has been, depressing. But the expected stimulus package is an opportunity to go the other way, and we're tracking that carefully to see what the implications might be for Alaska and ADA looking forward. You all are very familiar with this, but it's an important part of analyzing what the future trends might be and how ADA might react to it, the structure of the Alaskan economy. Unfortunately, all three of the major elements are, have their areas of stress. Oil, obviously, with the volatile prices and continued environmental pressures. The federal budget, with changes in D.C., and of course with the change in the Alaskan component going to Congress, and then of course in the other minerals and tourism, have issues that are going to affect Alaska. So we, and again, I won't go into this in detail. You have this, and you can take a look at it. And this is a first shot at the, trying to categorize anyhow the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And this slide is about the Alaskan economy. The good news is there are lots of meaningful strengths and opportunities. The bad news is that the magnitude of the threats in particular that are specific to Alaska are large. And again, it's part of our role is to figure out which of those are secular and which are short-term, and then how Alaska and ADA can respond to that. So this is, again, for the Alaskan economy. Then this next chart is ADA. And again, we have strengths and opportunities, some of which we talked about in the previous slides. The weaknesses, some of those are a little redundant, but there are two or three areas of potential weakness. The good news is that for this type of analysis, the threats to ADA are a relatively small short list, and not of the magnitude of the positives. So that's the good news for ADA. So the next steps in this process are to complete the environmental scan and document that. Same thing with the best practices survey. The consulting team will go through a second round of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats analysis. And then coming out of all of that, developed some preliminary strategies and program concepts, which we bring back to the ADA management team in the next 30 days or so. All of that aimed at being ready for a board workshop in March. Obviously, none of this is anything but preliminary until it comes to the board and the board has a chance to work through it. Coming out of that, then, the outline of what the strategic plan would contain would be a review and a review of the mission and goals and an opportunity to see how that relates to the future. A group of short-term objectives and strategies with some analysis and detailed background for that, and then policies and programs and procedures going forward, monitoring systems, and then a system for periodic updates. And that's an important part of the process, you know, going all the way back to that arrow slide on the beginning. The intention is to have a living system that allows you, that has a fairly long-term perspective, but allows you to make an annual evaluation and, you know, reprioritizing of what's on the plan to reflect the, you know, what's happening in that year. So that's a very quick run-through of what we're up to. And as I said, this will come back to the board as a preliminary body of work, which the board will have the opportunity to deal with in a workshop in March.
One thing I just like to follow up has been a real good process, and the workshop specifically that we had in November was very positive. We had a lot of discussion across a large number of business sectors, government sectors, economic development authorities, from state charters to the university. And there was a most definite interest in where this is going and how it can be applied, and an interest to continue the dialogue on a public basis. So a potential commitment we've got out to that group is that, one, of course, is the program itself is somewhat public, and our intention is to kind of roll out to make sure everyone fits on it, is continuing the process itself. And also the opportunity, there was a lot of desire to see if we could have an annual meeting from the ADA perspective on all the economic development we're going on, just to make sure that all these groups that were there had this opportunity to start communicating with each other. So it's been a very good process today with a lot of outside input and exposure. And Western Financial Group has been really helping us out a lot in this.
Okay. First question,
Chairman. I remember a while back we talked about staff getting back to us with a policy of ownership of assets.
Right, that's up on our agenda today.
Is it on our agenda today?
Yep, we actually have a draft. It got circulated yesterday.
I was curious if that's going to roll into this strategic planning. The other comment I had is there going to be, out of this strategic plan, is there going to be some type of portfolio investment program that we would kind of look at as to the future, where we think we should be looking at where we spend our money? And
when you talk about portfolio investment, flipping to our Callan stuff, and are you thinking not how we invest our reserves, but you're thinking about our portfolio, where we have our money?
Yeah, maybe a poor term, but we have X amount of things we do. Hotels, we do warehouses, we did today. We do Red Dog, we do various things in the ADA area. And I'm curious if we're going to talk about what we think we should do in that same investment program.
Yeah. So, Jim, the schedule that we have here is the board discussion in March. Is that that's not going to be with a final product, that's going to be engage us in the next round?
We anticipate that, actually, we haven't quite figured out the details, but it's definitely a working session, but we can sit down with the plan, with the information, with Western Financial Group, as a working group, working session, and just kind of, you know, feed this around and truly understand it and make sure that's the appropriate thing.
I think two things that come to mind. First, I think that as a foundation for that discussion, what I would ask is, I think
the board, we've kind of all come here from different experiences. We've engaged at the board level in different ways. I think it would be good to preface that discussion with maybe a half hour to an hour of just what is ADA right now, and what are we, how are we structured, where, when we talk about our programs, and just so that we're all real clear on the fact we have loan programs and we've got money there, but it's with a different relationship with the entity than our projects, and kind of give us a overview, because I don't think any of us really have a handle on where some of that sits right now. And that, I think, would be a good foundational information for us to then go into a strategic discussion of where we see it going.
Staff and directors have been having a lot of discussion on that and how best to do it. We would like to do it in the context of where we can go, but we can't get to that discussion without doing exactly what you said, and that would be very much part, and I might suggest that it might be a little bit longer than an hour.
Sounds fine. And I think the whole thing's going to be longer than our normal meeting, and so I'm just curious if we, how we have structured. Is that, hey, do we have somebody joining us? Okay.
Hi, Martin, calling from Alaska Power and Telephone. Is it time to come in for us, or is this too early?
I think you'll be listening for a little while. Are you here to make public comments or AEA? For AEA? You're probably about an hour early, I'd have to say, realistically.
Okay. Thank you.
So for our next, so for the March meeting, are we still looking at a 10:30 start time? And
we can certainly change it, but meeting date is for February.
Certainly, Galvin.
Oh, okay.
We were almost thinking, and this is just the staff, we were going to ask you to have this not on the same day of the meeting.
Okay.
To actually have a true half day, or how much time the board can invest into it as a work session.
That makes sense to me. I mean, that was probably my greater concern, was just adequate time to not feel rushed through it.
And Mr. Chair, in our experience with both the outside stakeholders and the staff, it's a half day kind of thing to really go through the background and the potential strategies.
Okay. Sounds fine. Is there another question? Yeah.
On page 6 of your presentation, under weaknesses, you have a term, inelastic state revenue structure. Will you explain that?
Sorry, that's economist speak.
The spot highlights.
Alaska.
Alaska.
That is the, in contrast with most states, the state fiscally, in other words, the state budget, is not necessarily a beneficiary of economic development activities. So that's what that means. It means that the state, you don't have income taxes, and you don't have other types of taxes that most states garner when they make economic development investments.
If you don't have that, why would that be considered a weakness? If you don't have certain tax structures, that may not be beneficial to business, like an income tax and things like that, whatever you said there.
Well, it's a...
How is that a weakness?
Yeah, it is. It's an issue about the state's ability to leverage economic development investments. That's why that's a weakness on that chart.
Still confusing, though.
I think the issue of incentives and potential incentives you might have.
Right.
If you come and do business here, we can reduce a tax and give you a tax break or a tax enhancement. Without having a tax structure, really, we don't have that ability to do that work that many other economic
buildings. We're already at zero. We can't make it
more. We can't give away what we don't have.
But that is a strength also.
It is. And by the way, you'll find that there are some things that show up in both places, on both sides of the ledger.
I think that the recognition is that while we have a strength of no statewide personal taxes, that the fact that the state doesn't see immediate or potential revenue stream from a general growth in the economy means that we have, there's a different sort of political calculus that goes into describing the state's value out of economic development, that there's just inherent in the provision of government services to improve life, as opposed to this is going to result in, this is an investment in our future state revenue, as most other states. And I think it's coming from a group that does this for other places, and we've got the Oregon example here. Probably some of the discussion they have in here is about investment for future revenue streams and how it's a good business, blah, 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 blah. They're saying, we don't have that here.
Well, in Alaska, in fact, you can take it even a step further, which is that economic development that involves in-migration
right.
is a fiscal negative to the state,
yeah,
which is contrary to what you see almost everywhere else.
It's just an unusual term, so we're trying to...
Mr. Chairman, can I speak to Commissioner Lachey's question before?
Sure.
I'm not sure if you got an answer. Sir, that I think the answer is yes. One of the outputs of this plan is getting what our business portfolio could be in terms of different projects, in terms of what projects you'd be looking for, different industry sectors as it relates to the Alaskan economy, the U.S. economy, and the world economy, and how they might fit. So that we have the ability to say, we believe that mining, for example, would be a little facetious as an industry sector. The ADA, therefore, might be able to be more proactive in actually looking for that, understanding that's part of the portfolio we'd like to have, and be able to examine that with risks and things like that as well.
So, go ahead.
Did we see this before it's finally printed?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think my understanding is that we will be integrally involved in the final product, and that we will get I shared Emil's concern just with the language on page 7, the next step schedule, where it says review with the ADA management team, then the final draft to the ADA management, and then the board discussion in March. I think it would be my initial reaction to that was, are we going to get a fait accompli dropped on us? And I think just with the understanding that it's going to be basically the work product that you have, understanding that it's not a done product, you're just bringing it to us for the next step in the process.
Right. Yeah, and as Mark can attest, I've been talking to him about that, saying that the
absolutely.
Board will be intricately involved, and this is the direction the board is giving us. So.
Okay, sounds good. Any other questions on the board? I've got the last question. And this goes, I think, Ted, and I haven't quite figured this one out myself, and you can try to explain it to me once again. The relationship between a statewide economic strategy, economic development strategy, and the ADA strategic plan. We're given what I believe is the Oregon Economic Development Strategy here, or is this from a ADA-type entity within Oregon?
That is actually from a public-private consortium, for want of a better term, that has worked together for a number of years in Oregon to try to develop the Oregon business plan.
Okay. So, and that actually is a perfect model for what I would envision if we were talking about a statewide economic development plan, that it would involve not only the state, and we'll use ADA as an example of the state, but also the Department of Commerce and other state stakeholders, private sector, and the university, and other interested parties in an economic development plan. And I just want to make sure that we understand that this is simply ADA's strategic plan,
right.
And that this would be an example of something different.
Exactly.
But that there is something going on with this, and I don't know if you're ready to, if you can, we'll talk about it another time, but what's going on with that?
Well, I'll just say at the beginning of the process, whatever the state does, we'll fit in with the
The 801? Okay.
Well, actually, I'd almost say it almost the other way, Commissioner. Whatever the state does, then ADA will fit its strategic plan into that. And as you can see, one of the SWOT highlights for ADA is it makes it a lot easier for ADA going through with this strategic plan, with the state having clear goals on development and economic development, then we can roll our strategic plan into helping the state meet those goals and opportunities.
I think what this does is allow ADA to be an effective and productive participant in the development of this overall state plan, because we will have covered the landscape on what economic development finance entities do.
Okay. Okay. Anything more on the update on the strategic plan? No other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
You ask and you shall receive there, Leo. So, Ted, I expect that the conversation with regards to this may go for a little bit, and maybe if there are other items that you have on your report that we might want to take ahead of time, it might be good to order it that way. Yes?
This is the first I've seen of this.
So okay.
I haven't been feeling comfortable sitting there really discussing it.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I got an email last night, but I didn't see it.
Well, maybe what we can do is we can just use this as an information opportunity for folks to say, okay, we got it. I've got a couple of comments on it because I did get a chance to read it last night. And then we'll bring it up again at the February meeting as potential more in-depth discussion and action item.
That was our plan.
Okay, sounds good.
Very important document.
Yes.
I'd like to have more time to.
And we could just give a quick overview of what's in this document for the board.
Sounds good.
But we could. We have Mark Schimsheimer here. And Mark, we have a quick presentation on Red Dog going through with our series. Of last time we gave you a overview on Skagway, and it's very informative. And Jim and Mark did a great job, I think. So.
Okay. Sounds like we'll do that and then come back. Will that be the last? Is that the last item on
the last item, unless the board feels the need to go into an executive session.
Right. Okay.
Except for board comments.
I kind of doubt that. Okay, Mark. You're up. Once you're up.
Turn off the lights. We have. No, not yet. Could we start in? We've put together about a 15-slide presentation here, which should take us about 15, 20 minutes to get through. If you have questions along the way, feel free. Otherwise, we'll hold them to the end. I'm the project manager on the DMTS. ADA's biggest asset. This is its general location, of course. Note that the Red Dog mine is about 50 miles inland. The Red Dog port, or port site, which is part of the DMTS, is on the coast there about 50 miles away, and its ADA's asset is the road between these two points and the port site. You don't own anything at the Red Dog mine itself. And all of this is, of course, in the Brooks Range. A couple of facts about this mine. It's the largest and richest zinc mine in the world, by far. It's also one of the lowest production costs of any mine in the world. The mine itself is a nano resource. It's Teck, formerly Teck Taminco, is the operator that is the miner. ADA owns the DMTS, and Teck operates it and maintains it on our behalf contractually. In the Red Dog Mine District, which is the western end of the Brooks Range there, there's quite a few deposits. These are some of the more notable deposits. There's three main deposits that are part of the current mine plan of Teck. which will get us through about 2031. Red Dog Main Pit, which will play out in a couple of years. The Akulik deposit, which is a large, significant deposit of fairly high grade, will take us through 2031. And the Kayanok deposit, and I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, I probably butchered it, is a smaller but high-grade deposit. There are three deposits in the immediate area that are not in the current mine plan, but depending on prices and other factors, they may come in. The first one is the, once again butchering it, the Palakka deposit is underground. It's actually immediately underground, the Akulik deposit, so in 2031 they have the option of continuing, but it would most likely go underground. The Anorak deposit is about 10 miles away, would need a road extension to get there. It's an underground mine. It is what it is. It's not part of the mine plan. And the Lik and the Sulik deposits, which are about 27 million tons, but it's still in the investigation, are part of some of the long-term issues that we're going to have to think about. There's somebody taking a hard look at this deposit. Its drawback is that it's about 25 miles away from the main deposit, would take a road extension, would require its own mill, and it's a low grade. So when people talk about Red Dog, realize there's a main pit, there's several additional pits that would open, and there's potential for long-term development in this region. Just a picture of the main pit. As pits go, it's not very big, but this is as it was as of August 2007. This is an extension of looking where what would have been to the left of this is a picture of the Red Dog main pit, and in the distance there is the proposed Akulik deposit. It's just been stripped there. They drilled it and stripped it. Note, though, that right there in the bottom, you see the operations of the main pit, which is effectively a loader and a very large truck. And that's it. That's the full extent of operations in terms of mining. It's not a large-scale mining operation. It's just such a high-quality operation that you can get away with that size excavator, effectively excavator and loader. This operation is contractually limited by NANA. So if Teck was given its own unbridled mining procedures, it would have played this pit out a long time ago, but being limited in production by its NANA contract, this is all that is required to run this mine. This is a picture of the mill site at Red Dog. Ada doesn't have any participation in what you see here in the picture, and this is the common view that you see from Red Dog. This is where the ore is milled into concentrate. This is an aerial view of the DMTS. Everything in this picture is owned by Ada, and you can see the two large concentrate storage buildings, the road that would lead 52 miles back to the mine site, about a 15 million gallon fuel storage area, man camp, and to the left is the offshore ship loader. DMTS assets, the road, the two concentrate storage buildings, and you can see in the lower left there our offshore ship loader. Every also miscellaneous assets that there include all the surge bins, conveyors, electrical generation, laydown yards. Everything at the port site is Ada's. View from the ship loader looking back, you can see how the conveyors will go up, fund the concentrate storage buildings through surge bins and through sealed conveyor systems to the ship loader. Also off to the right, you can see some of the tugs. There's four tugs sitting by at any given time, helping to lighter out the concentrate. Concentrate is lightered from the ship loader to the container vessels, which are located 3-4 miles offshore generally. This is not a deep water port. This is a shallow water port that container vessels can't get to our ship loader. So what you see there, if this works, does this work? Yeah. There's a concentrate barge being pulled. There's our ship loader, a concentrate barge, specially modified, is being pulled by a tug, one at the bow, one at the stern. It comes up to the container ship about 4 miles offshore. It's pushed up against it with the tugs, and this loading arm will load the, this in this case it's a handy vessel. were running between Handys and Panamaxes. Last year, Super Panamaxes showed up. So there's about 25 to 30 vessels per year will be there in about 100 to 120 day loading period. Concentrate ship, just so you can see, we ship effectively two different concentrates. One is zinc, one is lead. Zinc, when it's a concentrate, is a flour kind of consistency. It's about 56% pure zinc at the time. Coming out of the mine, you've seen that it could be anywhere from 15 to 25% zinc. The mill will refine it upwards into its 56%. And it will also reduce the water moisture content because ships don't like high moisture contents. You can see that there's variability. We put up 3 years here just to show you the variability in the total tonnage. Last year we had some, 2008, we had some events that kept us from achieving 1.4, 1.5 million tons, but the tonnage does go up and down. Project financing, originally project cost $265 million. The balance due after paying down bonds and debt, $242 million. There was, Valerie?
I have to correct you. I'm sorry. It's treated as a loan for financial statement purposes, and the investment's not related to the bonds and debt.
Okay. Our current debt on this project is $107 million in bonds outstanding. Just want to make sure I get that correct. It's pretty complicated little financial. Financial information, this is a look at the 2008 financials. $20 million includes all the payment streams that we generally get from TEC, excluding reserve fund activity, and it came in pretty much almost exactly at $20 million. That's just a coincidental that the number's so nice. Interest expenses and principal payments, a little over $10 million. Net impact to the income statement was also over $10 million.
And Mark, just to say that you can't take the 20 minus the 10,499 to get to the net impact. The net impact, Valerie, is the income we recognize off the lease minus the interest expenses off the bond, pretty much.
Right, and there's some amortization, too.
So, yes. Okay, I'm going to... Jim will talk about some of our near and long-term issues. One issue I'd like to highlight here, though, is our commodity prices. Historically, this mine, you can see right there in the lower right, we're running around 50 cents a pound. We're back to 50 cents a pound. Historically, that would have been looked at as a good price because the prices were running in the 30, 40 cent range, and TEC had a break-even point below this. TEC's break-even point on production is going up, and 50 cents creates a very challenging environment. It also will reduce our payment for our price payment. In the long run, we project our zinc price escalator payment to disappear with these low numbers. Not a terrible impact to us. But this does create a challenging environment. However, given that this is such a high-grade mine, mines all over the world have been shutting down. TEC has had some mines shut down, and I've seen that there's a floor starting to be created around the 50-cent price because as it goes below this, another mine shuts down. Most likely, Red Dog will be the last mine in the world for zinc to shut down because of its outstanding quality. With that, there's issues regarding the acrylic and other issues Jim can discuss.
The acrylic, as Mark indicated, is the next opening pit. Currently, the EPA is in the process of renewing the mine's water discharge permit. Before the EPA can issue their permit and the Corps of Engineers issue their wetland permit, Red Dog has been, the review has been done on the mine for the NEPA process. In December, EPA came out with their recommendations on the supplementary environmental impact statement. They are recommending as the preferred option, or the recommended option, I'm going to say with a thousand words, what they call option B, which is basically a continuation of the current operation and the current discharge limits. We are in the public comment period right now, and tonight I'll be at LUSAC Library as the anchorage chance for public comment as part of the EPA process. And basically what I'll be saying for the EPA is that, you know, This is a good ADA investment, and we support the EPA's recommended option as where they're proceeding.
Commissioner?
Mark, when we did the, when they had the valuation of Red Dog, was last year, do you know what date that was we got that?
It was done
they came before
in December
us.
Of 2007 or thereabouts, yes.
Over a year ago. Financial group, Mark?
So over a year and a half ago they presented
a year or two, or a year and a half ago is when that work was done.
So that would be...
The price was double
yes.
what it is now.
I was looking at the graph there, yeah. So the price, yes, it doubled.
At the time... Say a comment about that evaluation. The time
I was just trying to put the two together. When they brought that to us, they were looking at a dollar per pound for their ore, and now it's at 50 cents.
The book value still, based on our minimum lease payments, is approximately $242 million.
Yes. As of June 30th.
As of June 30th. So that, in essence, as Valerie was explaining to us in our staff meeting, is like the loan. That is the principal balance on the loan left from Tech to us.
And they offered us what when they came to us?
It's approximately 106.
Yes, I think it was 106.
And that loan is based on 6.5%. And there have been people that question me, how could it still be at 242 since 1990? And a good analogy to that is just like your home. When you take out a loan on your home, the first 5 or 10 years of payments are mainly
interest. And this is 50 years.
Sorry, the one slide where it drops down from 108 to 106 or 107. We retired some bonds too, did we not, Valerie?
There have been, there was an original issue of $103 million, and only a portion of that was refunded.
Commissioner Von Schaven, to follow up on your question, or maybe what you were trying to get to is, yes, back in 2007, the price was oscillating around a dollar. Mm-hmm. However, we had projections that when we did our evaluations, we had projections that brought the price of zinc down below 50 cents.
Right. Okay, good.
This was not an unforeseen event.
And our minimum lease payments, from my understanding, Valerie, are not based on the price of zinc.
That's correct.
We're still looking at the financial capability of the mine operator that make those payments, the risk analysis. Mm-hmm.
There is a sweetener if the price of zinc on an inflation-adjusted basis exceeds the 50 cents. And in fact, that's why we got $20 million this year. That included $2.3 million from the zinc price escalator.
Good. Anything else?
Any more questions?
Well, we have one more slide.
One more slide.
We wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of the outstanding issues. One is that this issue of a wastewater pipe. Tech and NANA have entered into a settlement agreement with basically five plants from Kivalina, which commits them to the construction of a wastewater pipe. Currently, the wastewater from the mine is treated and injected into Red Dog Creek, which is a tributary to the Woolit River. They are ongoing with the engineering, ongoing with the permitting on that. It is not the recommended EPA option, does not include the wastewater pipe. There is one that does, and the concern, of course, is that an option with the wastewater pipe as part of it would be there, as the mine technically would have to shut down and really complete all the engineering. So while the current and recommended EPA approach or recommended approach the EPA is recommending does not include a wastewater, does not mean the wastewater pipe work is not ongoing, which it is. It's a separate agreement, but a separate permit on its own. One of the other EPA preferred environmental options, that they call option C, if you see, I think, in the newspaper, is one where instead of trucking the ore concentrate to the port, they were looking at a slurry line, a concentrate pipe, to take that. It is not, while that might be their preferred environmental option, they're very clear in saying, in terms of fugitive dust emissions, this is a better way. But understanding the
business of the mine and what's currently ongoing, we are not making that our recommended option. So there again, there's information in the public domain about the concentrate pipe that is not one of the EPA recommendations, and it is not part of the permitting process as it stands today for opening up the Aqueduct mine.
Is the primary consideration there that the cost benefit as far as?
Yes. Okay. And it's done in elsewhere in other places. We're talking 50 odd miles of a water slurry in Arctic conditions with all the heat tracing requirements, potential leaks, and things like that are there. It's not inexpensive to do. There could be benefits to it. And I believe that Tech might, under this kind of a nudge, continue to look at that. They may have been looking at it more rigorously a couple months ago when prices of fuel were higher than they are now. But it would require a fairly extensive capital expansion. I don't know what the numbers would be. My guess would be in the estimate of $100+ million to do that. The other thing that's out there and people talk about is the deep water port expansion. Work was initiated with the Corps of Engineers to look at that and, again, put together a draft EIS statement on the port expansion, which include dredging, for lack of a better word, putting in a break wall to allow boats to dock and eliminate the need for lightering of barges. I've been contacted by not Tech, but ASRC specifically saying, gee, where's the draft EIS statement? The reason there is no draft EIS statement, although there has been about 1,000 pages of work being done, is that before the Corps of Engineers will take it to that next step and move to their headquarters, what the next step is, the draft EIS, they need a business plan. And people saying, we in fact, this is how we're going to pay for this expansion and why this expansion makes economic sense. Well, the local shareholders haven't been able to put that together, so it sort of sits in this draft status. But I did open up discussions again with the Corps about 3 weeks ago on this, and they are interested in whether or not we can get folks like ASRC, the Northwest Arctic Borough, to look at a business opportunity that might be there. And Tech might be interested in this as well. One of the options they had was to order another lightering barge, and they did not do that as part of where this issue was going. One of the last shipment of the season was force majeure because they couldn't lighter the barge. So while there might be some additional open water in there, they're concerned about the weather. And there may be an economic driver that gets us the deep water port expansion, but nothing in the short term. And the last thing that kind of echo Mark's comments on the Zazu, or the Sioux Lake development, Zazu Corporation has been here in the office a couple of times saying, gee, we'd like to have ADIM involved with expanding the road system and the port system to handle ore from the Sioux Lake deposit, which is big, but we also know from Mark's numbers the concentration of the ore is very, very low, and we don't believe there's any economics behind it. They haven't been able to come with us with a business plan yet.
So explain the relationship here. Zazu?
Zazu is a different company entirely, and they would like to develop the Sioux Lake deposit. They are partners with Tech on 50% ownership of some of that deposit, and they would buy them out in terms that Tech is not interested at all right now in their plan to open that. Zazu is, and they spent the summer and the past summer season doing coring, trying to understand what the mineral concentration is, and that 9% number is actually from their information. So it would require a fairly extensive, another, as Mark said, 26, 27 miles of road, at least another bridge expansion, and then it becomes the issue of traffic control at the port and capacity of the port to load multiple ships. It's out there. It's a potential development right now. They haven't been able to come up with a business plan that makes sense.
Okay.
And that's it in terms of the Red Dog, where we are, and what we see in the future opportunities for that.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Seeing none.
Thank you.
So we're at about 12:30. The last item, sort of official item on our agenda, will be a discussion of the retention and divestiture policy that we were handed. I guess I'll ask board members, would you prefer to finish this up, complete the ADEM meeting, and then break for lunch before taking on AEA, or do you want to break for lunch now and then move right through? Any preference, anybody? Seeing none? Okay, let's, for the purposes of breaks, let's push through this, and maybe the conversation will be shorter as our stomachs grumble.
Yes, right.
Jim, you can hear that for both of us.
Yes,
yes sir.
And Chris is, you know, why?
Yeah, there's no pressure.
At the city of Wasilla, there was a 3-minute Leonard rule, so.
Oh, okay.
Chairman Galvin and the board, we've been looking at this as we go through our strategic plan, and we did state to you that we would be coming up with policies on divestiture. And as we've moved in researching that, it has come really clear that we also, at the same time we're looking at divestiture, need to look at the retention policy and our portfolio analysis. I want to point out directly that this policy, as you can see in the first paragraph, is dealing with only development projects. Mm-hmm. We will have in our strategic plan, as we look at loans, a loan portfolio, other investment policies, that this is strictly with projects that ADA owns and operates. And through that, and Jim's here to go through it in more detail if you want, is that we gave criteria that we believe that the board would apply in doing a portfolio review policy in applying our missions to authority for acquisition, retention, and divestiture. And also, as we went through the project on the retention policy and divestiture policy, it became clear that as we look at the policies, that we're looking at two main categories of projects, one that's performing project and one that are non-performing projects, and especially the performing and the policy retention policy. And then that there could be different criteria that you use or a different analysis. For example, on a non-performing, you would be looking maybe at the strategic advantage to continuing ownership versus the cost of retaining it, or things like can we restructure the project and make it meet our mission. And then from there, of course, after you do the retention and go through the policy, we believe that that should be a biannual thing on every performing project and every project that we have, actually, that we would go through a very detailed review every 2 years. Of course, the portfolio analysis, as we call it, and again, we're talking about our own projects, we would be doing on a continuing basis, yearly, going through, does it meet our mission? And just as we update our strategic planning process, that would be part of the process. And then on project divestiture policy, of course, after we've decided that this is a project that we should divest of, there are several factors that would be involved in considering the price, how you divest of it. And also, we believe that you would look at the two main categories again, performing versus non-performing. And then as you go into that, there are also projects that are usually retained by the private sector versus the public sector. For example, roads and ports are usually owned by a governmental entity and not the private sector, and that would affect what price, in my mind anyway, you would charge to a different purchaser. So, again, I apologize, board. We did not believe we would have a full policy. The reason we're bringing this is as more of a concept paper for you to look at, and as we move forward, just to get direction today, if you think we're going in the right direction, or as again, as you said, Chairman, are there concerns about how we're looking at this?
Okay. So, as I said earlier, I have looked at it. I don't know if anybody else had the chance to look at it yet, or if you're just sitting in a cold view.
The way I look at it, the crux of it's in the second page, project diversification policy. And I guess what I would say to Ted, you have to picture yourself reading this and say, pick a project, pick Red Dot,
Right.
And you're asking these questions. So if it's yes, no, or whatever, there has to be some kind of response or relate. For example, Red Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Is the project typically owned by the government sector? Yes, no. What does that mean? Is the project being sold to the government sector or a private sector? The questions you're asking is, what do you expect? What kind of response do you expect to have? It's going to be owned by a private sector. If it is, does that mean it's a positive and we'd be interested to get rid of it? Or does what does the private sector have to do with owning it? Is the project typically owned by a private sector? Is the price that has to be fair then or maximum? Is the price sufficient to cover debt? All these are yes and no's or mm-hmm. questions. So I guess you have to kind of go through an example of some assets you have and ask these questions on it and see if it makes sense.
And you bet. And that's what we have seen, too. We are just using it as this concept paper, I guess, Commissioner, that these are the criteria. So we did put it in a yes-no, but these are all the type of criteria
and
questions
you
asked.
If you had 10 questions, you had 8 yeses, would you sell? I mean,
well,
that's what I'm saying. Is what does that mean when you start getting yeses or no's?
And that's part of the art of how you go through this, because in certain different projects, there would be more weight to certain questions than or criteria than there would be in a different one.
I was thinking the same thing about weighting, but if you ask these questions, there has to be some kind of response to these questions, because you're saying this is our policy, so get yourself going through it once.
Right. And this isn't the policy. We would not write it in this format. I would go back to Brian and
I might suggest that what we've got here on the concept paper are those things that might be included both in a policy and a guideline. None of these are going to be easy questions, even on the yes or no. It's really more of a consideration type question. And it works our way down the way the concept paper is laid out is issues of are we meeting the missions and goals, how does this fit in our portfolio, is the project performing the way it's supposed to be in all aspects of where the mission is. And if there is the need for divesting, these are the things that need to be considered on setting the price really is on the divestiture.
I guess my point is once you put this together, test it.
Example,
to see if these things make any sense.
I mean,
the questions you're asking or the policy you're saying. Because if I go by these questions, I understand the questions, but I'm not sure how I come out with anything after I answer them all.
I think where Leo's going is if you imagine this being a investment score sheet and we go through and there are certain values. I mean, these questions are not equally weighted. Some of them are going to be like the crux of the question and others are going to be a consideration of that. And I think part of what Leo's indicating is at some point we're going to struggle with a particular decision. And to the extent that this can be a tool in making a decision, we're going to have to know does the guidelines or whatever, does the policy result in us being leaning towards this looks like one that we should be divesting or this is one that we should be retaining. What this tells us is these are the things you should be thinking about, but it doesn't provide, you know, this is the top one. If this answer is this, then that would lean towards retention. If your answer is this, that would lean towards divesting. And I think that's the next step that Leo would be looking for, is to know whether an answer pushes you one way or the other and whether it pushes you a long way or just a little.
And the order of the questions, yes, of course, is that when you look through the retention questions, those are going to be, should this project be retained, should this project be divested? And those tend to be more yes or no's. The divestiture, the issue of the divestiture policy was one of what should be considered in setting a price.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think that helps because what's confusing to me is that the structure of this right now is you've got your retention policy and you've got your divestiture policy, and the initial question is a flip side. You either decide you're going to retain it or you're going to lead toward divesting it. And I think the second question is, if this project has fallen into the divestiture, what would be appropriate ways to divest it and what would not?
Yes.
And that just because it fell into the divestiture, if the opportunity to divest it and meet the agencies or our goals cannot be met, we need to stop and say, okay, this is an asset that would be divesting if the opportunity arrived. The opportunity isn't there, and so we're going to stop. And so I think that seems to be the sequence you're going, but it's not completely clear here because the questions kind of overlap each other a little bit.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Is there an audit requirement involved here?
Well, I'm sure that would be a consideration built in once we get to actual decision-making, that the numbers that we'd be relying upon would have to be clearly audited and something that we have confidence in. The other thing I'd note is I'll just hit the points that I picked up on. We start off with project portfolio review policy. The first paragraph talks about, or the first sentence, applying the missions and goals of the authority to the acquisition, retention, and divestiture of owned and operated projects. So we're talking about decision-making in terms of whether we would get into a project as well as retention and divestiture. Obviously, they need to be consistent with each other. But then it says, as part of this corporate retention and divestiture policy, we should consider the following. And then, so it raises the question as to whether or not these are your acquisition considerations or simply the retention and divestiture considerations. And I just want to make sure that is clear.
We probably can't do a good segue into that. It is supposed to be a subcomponent. We know there would be another component of this on the investiture, the investment side of what projects you decide to go in.
Right. So
this was supposed to be a subcomponent for the divestiture and retention.
Okay, so
very likely the questions would be the same. It's the issue of why do we get into the business, why we get out. And Kurt's point about the segue is a good one because they're similar questions. That was the intent. We need to be consistent in what we do from the acquisition to the divestiture on our analysis. And now we're just repeating those same questions. And it would be we need to make that more clear.
And then, I won't get into the details of my questions right now, but I appreciate the distinction between performing and non-performing assets, but I think that, to me, is perhaps the crux of our identity crisis in the context of this issue is the board, at least thus far in our discussion of this topic, has indicated a preference for being a catalyst and not a long-term operator. That we get something going, once it's going, we find somebody to run it long-term. The question of whether or not something is performing or not performing obviously fits into a valuation process, but it's difficult if you're seeing yourself in that way to say, well, this is a performing asset, it's making us money, so therefore we're going to keep it, because that's a different consideration. Now, the part that is the balance is when you get to the question of, and it's pulled up here, you know, whether divestiture of the project would negatively affect the authority's credit, bond, or other financial rating, whether it, to put it more bluntly, if Red Dog is a cash cow for us, does the fact that it's generating a bunch of cash for us mean that we have the ability to engage in other projects that we otherwise wouldn't if we divested ourselves of Red Dog, had the legislature come in and sweep the money out, and then we're left again struggling to get the capital to move on to other projects. That's a valid consideration that I think needs to be part of this discussion. I don't know the answer. I don't. I'm not completely conversant in how that relationship works. But to me, I appreciate what you're trying to do here, but we're going to have to really crystallize those considerations and not tiptoe around it, because that is the crux of what we're going to have to decide as a board in terms of how we see ADA as an entity and our relationship to our ongoing assets.
That's why it's important to put it in the context of the opening line is trying to make this. It needs to be in context of what our strategic plan is, mm-hmm. and what are we here to do.
I agree.
So without that understanding of what our strategic plan, we don't know what our portfolio should look like. Without knowing what our portfolio should look like, we don't know that we should retain or divest, be a catalyst, get out. But are we offering as a, are we a long-term incentive for mining industry because we hold on to the asset for long-term? There's not variations. We don't know any of that until we have a firm definition of the strategic plan.
That's logical. I understand that. And I think that will probably, to a certain extent, hinder our ability at our next board meeting to finalize a discussion of this, because then it's going to be, well, let's wait until next meeting when we can talk about the strategic plan. And I can appreciate that's probably going to be the way it happens. But just to give you, I guess, an insight into where I see this conversation leading to, I think we need to allow the board to focus in on some of those issues. Go ahead, John.
Going through this, we have the shipyard, and we have Red Dog, our assets fit into this. Do we have any?
Yeah, oh, sorry.
What others do we have?
Okay, we have the shipyard. We have
about five projects.
Five now. The shipyard.
Well, let's make sure we're clear. Shipyard and Ketchikan.
Yep, then we have Jet Express, Hanger.
Right, Anchorage.
Oh,
Skagway.
The Skagway port.
Skagway terminal. Now I've lost track. We have Red Dog up in the northeast or northwest.
Start in the north.
Neshe.
Let's start with our map. Okay. Up in the northwest, we've got Red Dog. Come down to Anchorage.
Anchorage, we've got the FedEx hangar.
Hit Juneau. Skagway.
Skagway. We've got the ore facility. We've got Juneau. We've got Neshe. We've got the Ketchikan shipyard.
Okay. Those are your five.
Thanks.
Projects under.
All right.
And for the time being, we have a six.
Well, let's hope we don't have to add it to the list.
Yeah.
You know, Pat, I think your comment on it as a catalyst for long-term ownership to me is the big key. That is the whole key. And I like this last sentence in the mission. With the purpose to promote, develop, and advance the general prosperity and economic welfare of the people of Alaska. I see ADA as one that kickstarts things, gets them going, and then moves on. And I think long-term ownership to me is difficult. I think we want to diverse ourselves once we, and we have the advantage of being the catalyst, just like that. I like that term. Then how long will we stay into it? I know you got a good deal with Red Dog, and I appreciate that, but, you know, does it hurt to go out and to go somewhere else within the state for the people of Alaska to do something with it, and we move on?
But I think
as long as we get a decent price.
But and the issue to me is going to be, does, if our mission is to be a catalyst for other projects, does divestiture of Red Dog or retention of Red Dog advance that that interest more? In other words, we may actually put ourselves in a position to be a catalyst for other projects. We may put ourselves in a better position to be a catalyst for other projects by retaining Red Dog, because we're generating the revenue from that.
And the bond ratings.
Yeah. And the bond rating and everything else, than by divesting ourselves of that. But that said, when you have these other assets that are not of the substance that may have,
right.
I think it creates the question of, you know, does our policy of Red Dog end up overly influencing our retention of the other assets just because we're slow to make that decision because we just don't put ourselves in that position.
Another example, Chairman, is, for example, if we're doing direct financing leasing, for example, would be the airport hangar. If we're doing those type of projects, it also comes then into investment too, because if we're saying we're going to build this hangar and we want
had expressed to come in there, there may be reasons where the tenant that we're looking at would want us in there long term, based on our structure, our capability to be a long-term partner. So that also comes into the strategic plan retentions of what type of projects then.
I just want you to know, your staff, whoever's in the kitchen making food right now, they're making your conversation have to be shorter and shorter.
Jim and I are done.
I've got a comment about your comments about Red Dog. You know, the crux of the matter is those are revenues we need. And I think we're limited by the size of the project we do by like the $20 million before we have to go to the legislature to get approval for it.
Now you're talking bonding.
To finance a project. Yeah.
Right now, we cannot issue a bond. We're going. Can I talk about this one?
So all I want to know
if it's public, we can talk about it. If it's not public, we can't.
There are conditions right now with the legislature that
for limited
project, we have to go to them
right.
To bond right
now. This plant was one of them. Red Dog was another one. I don't know if the shipyard was, but what's that getting at? But the concern about our future, we may hinge, may affect our decision on Red Dog. Whether we can do it or not, it'd be nice to get that taken off. So we don't have to go through the legislature to do major big projects. And then we won't be affected on a decision by the way the Red Dog helps us now. Because we can get what we need to go in the legislature to finance a big another big project.
Right. Okay. So is that the end of your report?
That's the end, and I think we have.
Unless there's something you just got told?
Right,
that's next up. That's next after. All right, so I guess it's technically within the director's comments, but you don't have any particular comments. Okay, so the next question from staff is with regard to HeliClean Coal, is there an item that you feel needs to be discussed, and if so, does it need to be discussed in open forum or executive session? First question, is there something we need to talk about with HeliClean Coal that anybody knows about?
Well, I would like to make a statement about yesterday's discussion. Take me 30 seconds.
Okay, and do you want that to be on the record, or would you like that to be an executive session?
I'm comfortable with it being on the record.
Okay. Go ahead, Charlie.
You're right.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah, Steve. Thank you.
Thank
Our
you.
Shuffling.
Yesterday, I think I expressed some equivocation in response to Mr. Kelsey's statement of whether I supported this agreement. And my equivocation there arose because I think I was confused about the meaning of Section 5B of the term agreement. And that is the section of the term agreement which provides that the asset sales agreement must be completed by February 15th. And if it is, then the parties would petition the court for a stay of the litigation until August 1. I was confused about the scope of that provision. And after the meeting yesterday, I spoke with the chairman, and he explained it to me. And with my now current understanding, I do not have the reservations which I appeared to express yesterday. And let me just say a word about 5B. 5B, as I said, is the provision of the agreement that asset sales agreement must be completed by February 15th. That is a date to which I agreed, essentially to sort of stay the depositions in the litigation. And one of the reasons I did that was to enable us to review the documents which had been produced to us by GVA in response to our request for production. They gave us about 10,000 pieces of paper, and we gave them maybe that much or more. And it really takes a lot of time to review those documents and to assess them and digest them. And I thought, and I think the other counsel did too, that February 15th would allow us time to do that and to prepare for depositions. So I agreed to that date, but I thought that that was the last date we could really defer the discovery and yet hold a trial date. So with the understanding now that that agreement, the asset sales agreement, is to be a fairly comprehensive agreement to really, not a definitive agreement as provided in 5C, but a comprehensive agreement, which is, in my view, would be an enforceable agreement, one that cinches up the deal. And with that understanding of it, I am now comfortable with those provisions of the agreement. And I just wanted to say that to make it clear that what I thought about that term sheet. So
thank
you for the opportunity to express those views. That's all I have to say. I want to say we have spoken with this morning with counsel for GVA and counsel for GVA in Portland with respect to the status conference tomorrow, and they were very cooperative and encouraging, I might add, that we'll be able to work out and agreeable provisions for the amendment of the pretrial order to take care of this February 15th date. So
great.
I want to say that, teleport that.
Thank you,
Joe. Thank you very much for the opportunity to express these views.
Thank you. I think the only other comment I'd like to just make, that's really to Ted and to Brian, let's get cracking on the sales agreement, make contact with our temporaries over at GVA and get to work on making sure we get those done.
And
if you haven't already.
Has already started.
Great. Okay. Any other questions or comments with regard to Healy Clean Coal Plant?
Charlie?
Yes.
I want to really say thank you to you and Leo for taking this thing and doing what you did. You know, there's been a lot of negative press on this read in certain parts of the paper. And I got to say that, you know, it's a great deal. And anybody that does wants to know the history, they should go back and look at our first offer we got and then compare it to this one. There's no doubt this is the best deal that Ada could have got.
Thank you. Okay, so moving on the agenda, next item is board comments. Any board members wish to make a comment on the Ada side of our agenda?
I just second John's comments. That's all.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, hearing none. Is there no other items to come before us, so is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any opposition? We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Time for lunch.